Blog Talk Radio.
Such matters practice not.
been humble.
Good afternoon, good evening, and good morning, wherever you are. Welcome to the Red Sox Blogger with your hosts, Tim Burton and Cal Fritzy. And today we are going to discuss a very dire issue, and that is the amazing things that Islamists get away with in terms of the corruption, punishment, penalties, fatwas, Sharia law, and especially Chapter 9, Verse 29. Before I delve into that, though, I would like to say hello to my co-host. And hi, Tim. How are you?
Well, good evening. Good evening, Kel, and good evening, everybody. And how the devil are you this evening, Kel? I know you've got a lot on your plate today, so I'm not going to start off with my usual bright and breezy self. I'll just say my condolences to you, because I know it's been a tough time for you today.
Yeah, and thank you, Tim. Ladies and gentlemen, everybody who listens to RSB and listens to me on EDL and people that visit various chat rooms, everybody knows that I have had issues with my pet, and that is my Brandy, and Brandy crossed the Rainbow Bridge today at 11:55 a.m. She did not, suffer or anything. Her little head was resting in my lap, and she was administered. It was a very, very, very sorrow moment, but my dog of 14 years, she's at peace now, and she's frolicking in the fields out there somewhere, and probably doing a better job at catching mice than Bria is. it's not been an easy time for me and Mr. Kell in terms of trying to take care of her. It was the toughest job I've ever had to do, trying to take care of Brandy and ensuring that she had a comfortable mortal life, but it just didn't work out that way. And so she died in my lap earlier today, but that's the circle of life, right, guys? Right,
yeah.
Right, Tim?
Well, it is, and I think you can take comfort in the fact that you were a great you and Mike, obviously, great owners to Brandy, and she had a good life, and it is one of those things, and it's always tough to lose a pet. It's an experience I've been through, which it's always hard, and there are no words, and all you can do is just let people know that you're there for them.
Absolutely, and that's it. Everybody can empathize with that, and that when you have a pet, a beloved pet, and especially Brandy that was with me, by my side for 14 years, it's not going to be easy to, recover from that. And so, people, I implore you, if you have a dog or a cat or a goat, like the Muslims usually do, just hold them close. Because they are precious, and they're sentient. I love the sentience, and you have to really appreciate them. And Brandy was a handful. She was a bit of a brat in that she would get into things and get into the garbage can, for example. And she would find something in upstairs. And my favorite story I like to relate is Brandy got into one of the plants that we had upstairs, and I was chasing her up that damned room, and I was going, "Brandy, you're a bad, bad girl. Get out of there. Get out of there now." And she's racing down the stairs, and I'm chasing after her, and I do a face plant on the carpet, and I got a carpet burn, and it's like, "Brandy, I'm going to kill you." Life of pets. But, like I say, though, ladies and gentlemen, cherish your sentients. You brought them home for a reason, and they do offer nothing but unconditional love. They truly love you. And, they're there one day, and the next day they're gone. And it's a very sad day in the Fritzy household. But, it'll get better. But I'm in a state of suspended animation. But I am such a pet lover. Kim knows that so very much because I'm always talking about my pets. And, the household will get through it. But, Tim, what are we doing today?
Well, today, Miss Fritzy, we are going to talk about the propensity of Islamists and Muslims everywhere and always to get a free pass for everything that they do, no matter how dire or how atrocious their behavior. It seems that nobody is willing to stand up and condemn them for the evil acts that they perpetrate. And it's something that's got to change. But we're going to be talking about several of the more egregious examples that have occurred over the past couple of weeks. And what was that in the background I just heard? Are you all right there?
That was me buffering up a soundbite.
Oh, okay. Because, it sounded like Glenn Miller's In the Mood, which I can't think that was the most appropriate soundbite for the circumstances.
You're very good. That's exactly what it was. It was Glenn Miller In the Mood. And that was a tee up for a clip I'm going to play a little later on.
Oh, okay.
But
it's just it wouldn't have been the clip that I would have played at this point in time. But there we go, it just shows you what music is like, ladies and gentlemen. But anyway, that's the plan. And accompanying this evening, Kel, we've got another fine gentleman joining us, I understand.
We most certainly do. And this is my pinch hitter. And this is Agador. And hello there, Agador. How are you tonight? Wherever you are.
At this particular moment in the time band, I am quite well, thank you. And all condolences to you for the loss of Brandy, your beautiful dog. And yes, you stated it very well. We've all lost those wonderful four-legged friends of ours that give us the unconditional love. And though time will heal the wound, I know that right now it's fairly raw for you. And I am more than happy to help out today if it is needed. And you were quite right. Brandy is having a great time. And I may say a little prayer later, and get a cat that I used to have named Ramoth to show Brandy where all the good doggy spots are, so she can have a little bit of fun. They can kind of hang out a little bit, and maybe Jeff's Tammy can tag along too. We're all family here, and we're all ready to help, and we're all ready to do an effective show today, because though our lives move on, so does Islam, and we have to do what we can to stop it. Back to you guys.
And what I want to do is that I really do want to talk about the amazing things Islamists get away with. How they can, for example, hold a woman who is 8 months pregnant in a prison, how they can hold a pastor who was trying to build orphanages in prison, how they can get away with this. But they can bring their philosophy into the West, on our Western shores. And this is going to be a bit of an esoterica show tonight, folks. But and I will bring up specifics a little later. But the Islam is not the religion of peace. Okay, let's do a tally, shall we? Okay. Do you want the weekly jihad report or the monthly jihad report, gentlemen? Oh, okay. Let's go with the weekly. And this is from May 17th to May 23rd. Okay. There have been 50 jihad attacks. There have been 7 Allah Akbars, and that means suicide attacks. Dead bodies in 1 week, 500. And 61. How many have been critically injured? Let's see. 495. Now, there are issues about what they're capable of doing, and why is it they get away? They get such a pass, but people like Sayed Abedini is being held prisoner, and he's languishing in a prison worse than that of where he was in the first place. And this is knocking my mind around. And Agador, what do you think about that?
Well, it's definitely a double standard worldwide. excuse me. It's fueled by petrodollars that are fed into the pockets of politicians to look the other way and indeed act in the favor of the Islamists. All of the issues that you have up there attest to that. We should have enough influence over Sudan, the Western countries, so that they will release this woman and possibly change their laws when it comes to religious tolerance. I mean, Tim has the information on the specific United Nations resolution about religious tolerance that they are breaking egregiously. We should have the influence to take care of that, but we don't. We should have the influence where we don't use it. We should have the influence to have Pastor Abedini released, and we don't use that influence. We should have the influence to do something about Boko Haram, and I won't say that we don't use any of our influence or any of our resources there, but we're using them in a manner where we're telegraphing all of our moves to the very people we shouldn't be telegraphing our moves to. And I think as a lot of the commentators say, just follow the money. And the money leads from the oil fields and the oil sheikhs, and it makes its way into the pockets of our Western politicians from all three of our countries. And that drives the policy that allows these horrific things to happen. Back to you guys.
Thank you, Agador, and that's exactly it. Follow the money trail, ladies and gentlemen. And I just put a link in the chat room for everybody to expand on Pastor Sayed Abedini, and he will be featured on Radio Jihad Network in June. But, it happens without warning. This man, he went over to Iran to build orphanages, and he was arrested. He's still arrested. He is still under guard. He is still languishing in one of the worst prisoners you can imagine it is just absolutely unfathomable to me that he has not been brought home. Now, Barack Hussein Obama said that he wanted to bring him home, but that has not happened. He has been under arrest for 2 years. But we have people who emigrate from the Middle East or Pakistan or North Africa or Asia in particular, and they come over here, and they can engage in our democracies, and our constitutions protect them. We have people that bludgeon their wives to death in their sleep because they did not like a meal that was prepared. And they are being tried for second-degree murder, and the explanation is that, well, it's part of the culture. That is multiculturalism working at you. It is absolutely disgusting. And, Tim, you're seeing that in the UK.
Oh, yeah, we see it all the time. I can think of a couple of recent examples. There was a man in Sheffield who sawed the head off his girlfriend for reasons unknown. Well, unknown, that is, until you find out that he was a Muslim, and then it all falls into place, because extreme violence, of course, is extremely common when you read about Muslim involvement in these kind of things. And it's all these things that are happening in so many different parts of the world, what do they have in common? Well, the answer is Islam. Islam is the problem. Islam is what drives this inhumanity towards their fellow man that results in all these hundreds of deaths every day of the week. I mean, you quoted a statistic a little earlier on from the Religion of Peace. Mm-hmm. Just 1 week, 50 jihad attacks, 7 suicide bombings, 561 dead bodies, 495 critically injured. Just another week, as far as Islam is concerned. And the tendency is for everybody who is in a position to make a difference, by which I mean people in positions of power, whether it's political power or whether it's church leaders or anybody in authority who could actually stand out and say, this is pure unmitigated evil, it's driven by a perverse ideology that is completely against humanity in general and non-Muslims in particular. Nobody will stand up and say anything about that. So, because of Agador mentioned petrodollars, I think that's obviously one aspect. There's greed that's involved. There's also fear of if you raise your head above the parapet in these matters, you might suddenly find it gets shut off, literally, because people who criticise Islam in public are often exposed to extreme sanctions, including being killed. There's also the fear of one losing one's job, particularly in the West, if you speak out against Islam. You know, even our local authorities forbid people from speaking out and joining patriotic groups, such as, this is in the UK I'm thinking of in particular, but I'm sure similar examples can be found elsewhere in Western democracies. Local authorities forbid their employees to speak out and join patriotic groups who might speak up against disgusting inhumanity that is committed in Islam's name by Muslims every day of the week. And if you belong to a local authority and you speak out against this, you can lose your job over it. It has a great chilling effect. And of course, all sorts of other examples exist. I'm thinking about other things that have the chilling effect, and I think Agador also mentioned about the United Nations Resolution 1618, which Muslims mm-hmm. are trying to push through in the United Nations, supposedly to stop proper criticism of religions. But of course, we all know what they're talking about. They do not want any criticism of Islam.
They're talking about Muslims.
Yeah, of course they are. And it's only Muslims, because no other followers of any other religion behave in this way at all. It's only Muslims. And Islam is profoundly anti-humanity. And there is a lot of money flowing around to silence those voices that dare to speak out and speak the truth. Well, we on this radio show are not going to be silenced. We are going to speak the truth. We are going to say the problem is Islam. We are going to say Islam is anti-humanity. We are going to say there is no place for Islam in civilized society. And we have to start taking steps now to undo the damage that's been done over the past 30 or 40 years with allowing large numbers of followers of this perverse and inhumane ideology to fill our Western countries, and it has to stop. But yes, they are getting a free pass, they are getting away with it, and they're claiming all the time that they are the victims of oppression, and that anybody who speaks out against their benign and tolerant religion of peace is a racist, bigoted Islamophobe. And people are actually swallowing this bullshit. It's a total fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Islam is in no way a benign and tolerant religion of peace. It's a perverse, ruthless, totalitarian political ideology, and it has no place on the face of the planet. And we have to do everything we can to eradicate it, starting in our own countries, and eventually, one hopes, getting rid of it from the rest of the world. But that's obviously not going to happen overnight, and we have to concentrate on getting it out of our own
Genghis
countries.
Genghis Khan didn't finish the job.
Well, quite. Yeah, quite. Quite. If only we had had the internet in his day, you know, we'd have made short work of those pesky Islamists. But I was just finishing up my rant and just ready to pass the microphone back to you, Kel.
Well, one thing that bothers me is that the world is not taking notice of a young lady who is heavily pregnant, and her name is Maryam Abraham. She's 27 years old, and she is languishing in a prison because she has been brought forth by her family members as being an apostate. And she married an American Christian, and he is disabled, and nobody's helping this family. They're not helping her. They're not helping him. They're not helping their young son, who his name is Martin. And I want to thank Paul Alexander. He is of C.P.
Nagasaki.
Thank you.
C.P. Nagasaki. Yeah.
Nagasaki. Okay. And he is the defender of faith, guardian of truth, and he brought this article to our attention. And there is a petition out there, ladies and gentlemen, that you can sign to demand her release. And what's happening, Tim, and Agador, which really, really, really concerns me, is that the embassy is saying the United States, and Mike, I don't even know where to begin with this. There is a Sudanese embassy. I can't believe that thing has not been shut down. The Sudanese embassy in the United States of America is saying, don't even bother with your petitions because you'll just endanger yourself. And I don't know what they mean by that. In Ecuador, in the United States, as you are, like, when you hear press releases like this, and this is an official press release in which the Sudanese embassy said, don't even bother, you know, wasting your time because you're just going to endanger yourself. Like, Ecuador, do you ever want to kick out these embassies?
Of course. It's any civilized person does. See, the rest of us, in the West have decided to live together, even if we don't have necessarily the same religions. Jewish people, Christians, Hindus, Buddhists, we do our thing with our own faith, and we let others live side by side with us in a secular society. That's what we've all decided. Not just in the West. This is a decision that most religions have made worldwide, and this is just an example. Sudanese saying this. This is just an example of how Islam will have none of that, and this is an example, in my opinion, of why all civilized nations throughout the world have to shun the purveyors of this cult of hate. I would love to see us close the Sudanese embassy here. It's not doing us any good at this point to have it open. If they are going to flout all vestiges of humanity by allowing this poor woman to be in shackles merely because she says she is a Christian and has chosen that faith over Islam. This is the sort of thing that if there weren't the things that Tim was talking about, we would act on. And I just want to expand a little bit on what Tim was talking about there too, which is that Tammy Bruce calls what these people do projection. It's very similar to the schoolyard bully beating up someone and at the same time telling him, stop hitting me in the fist with your face. They act in a monstrous way, and yet they call us the monsters. No, it is time for all civilized nations worldwide to shun these people. So to answer your question quicker, Kelly, yes, I would.
Yeah. That's absolutely right. I mean, it is time that civilized nations stopped being in denial and admitted the fact that Islam is just completely incompatible with our form of civilized society. Well, I'm talking about civilization based on Judeo-Christian principles. And before anybody accuses me of being unduly biased towards Judeo-Christianity, I have to say that I'm not talking about the actual the faith side of it, where people can decide that there is or is there is not a deity associated with any particular faith, and there are certain religious rituals associated with a particular faith. I'm not talking about that. What I'm talking about is the civilizational model that the words Judeo-Christianity encompass. And I think most people would agree, and if they don't, then they should, that Judeo-Christianity has a very good civilizational model. It's not perfect. I don't think there's ever going to be any man-made structure that will ever be perfect in that it will give 100% of all
possible benefits
to 100%
of people. Anyway.
Well, yeah, that's right. 100% of the benefits to all the people all the time is just not possible. But what Judeo-Christianity does is arguably provide the best framework yet devised by mankind for the betterment of humanity. And it certainly streets ahead of the Islamic civilizational model. And again, I'm not talking about faith to do with Islam at all. If Muslims want to believe in a particular deity and they want to pray to that deity five times a day, that's nothing to do with us. But when they try and impose their will on the rest of us because it's apparently what their deity says they have to do, then it stops being a faith and starts being a political ideology. And that's where we have to stamp on it good and proper. We have to say we are not going to accept that in civilized society anymore. And we have to shun these people, and we have to say, you can make a personal choice to continue to follow this ideology if you so wish, but then you don't do it in our country, you get out and you do it somewhere else. And if you wish to stay in our country, then you have to renounce that ideology in all in all forms that bring it into the public sphere and allow it to interact with civilized people. You have to just eschew that altogether. And if you can't do that, then we don't want you here. We have to say that to every Muslim in every Western country. And for those people who might say, well, that's a big thing to ask for, well, there are precedents. After World War II, the Sudeten, Czechoslovakians expelled millions of Sudeten Germans on exactly that basis. They did not want any vestige of German culture left in their country. And there were millions of Sudeten Germans in Czechoslovakia at that time, and they were expelled. There was a lot of bloodshed, I have to say. A lot of people died, and it was a very unpleasant business. But nevertheless, I refer to it because it's a precedent. And the other precedent I'm thinking of is also at the end of World War II, where the occupying American forces in Japan said to the Japanese, if you want to practice Shinto, which, again, was by and large a political ideology that drove the suicide cult, if you like, of Japanese fighter pilots flying their planes into American ships and so on. If you want to follow Shinto, then you can do it in the confines of your own home, but there will be no public expression of Shinto at all, full stop. And the occupying American forces in Japan just completely banned the practice. And, you know, that affected millions of Japanese at the time in their own country. So there are precedents. And for those people who say that it can't be done with Islam and Muslims in Western countries, well, yes, it can. The political will is not there, but logistically it is perfectly possible at this point in time to enforce a political will of that nature onto Muslims who happen to be in the West. And if they don't like it, then we should just say, well, there's the door. Don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out.
I want to ask you a question, and Tim, I'm going to address this specifically to you, because you being in the UK and you're seeing the what is going on with the Islamophobe movement within your own government, and the United States is seeing it too. Well, it's not so much Islamophobe. It is more demitude, I should say. Do you think our governments would have the fortitude to declare a moratorium on Islamic immigration? And I would like to see that, of course. Well, but we need one country to set the stage.
Oh, yeah.
We've
talked about this before. I recall. I don't think we have political elites with the willpower at the moment in any Western country to take that step. If, as you say, if one country actually took that step and showed that it could be done, I think other Western countries would follow in a domino effect very, very quickly. It does need one country to take a lead, though, because at the moment everybody is just too scared of putting their name to something like that, because obviously Muslims are not going to like it. They have been shown that they can form themselves into mobs and riot at a moment's notice. In fact, if there were ever a rioting gold medal to be given out at the Olympics, Muslims would win it hands down. I have absolutely no problem with that. And they would also get the gold medal for forming mobs at a moment's notice. And, general bloody-mindedness, I should think they would get at least a silver medal for. But, I mean, that's by the by. So nobody wants, I'm quite sure, and this was actually mentioned in a previous show only a few days ago, I'm quite sure that our elites are aware of the problem, but nobody wants to put their name to the measures that are necessary to actually do anything about it. They're all hoping that they can keep the lid on the And whether it's through greed, dimitude, fear, or a combination of those factors, they're hoping they can keep the lid on the situation until such time as they can retire and it's somebody else's problem, which I think is a highly immoral way to conduct oneself if one's in public office and your country that you have pledged yourself to defend from domestic and foreign enemies is under attack by a bunch of weasels operating with a political ideology that they're trying to disguise as a religion. I think it's completely immoral that they do that, but nevertheless, that's the caliber of political leaders we have at the moment, and those leaders, I don't see it happening, but we need different leaders. That's what we need.
This is exactly where I am going towards, and this is my mission. This is, ladies and gentlemen, I implore you, don't email your local politician, your national politician. Sit down and write a letter and demand that Islam be de-indexed as a religion, because it's not. It's a political entity, and we have to do this. I mean, we have seen what has been going on in the United States in particular. We have seen what has been going on in the UK in particular, and I'm in Canada, and we don't want it. We have seen the corruption. We have seen the violence. We have seen what Islam is capable of doing, and we have seen the corruption within our own governments, and we have to stop it. I want to share something with you folks right now. And this is a very important message to share.
On Saturday evening, the 31st of May at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, the lies and cover-up of Extortion 17 will be fully exposed. Join Holger Awakens, the Awakening Show on Blog Talk Radio, as he welcomes Charles Strange, the father of Navy SEAL Michael Strange, to discuss what happened the night his son and 21 other Navy SEALs and 8 other servicemen were killed when their Chinook helicopter came under attack by Taliban forces in Afghanistan. Extortion 17 represents the largest loss of life in naval special warfare operations personnel in the history of America, and ever since this tragic event, answers to troubling questions have been stonewalled by military and Obama administration officials. There have been flat-out lies about what really happened with Extortion 17. Charles Strange brings passion to unearthing the truth of what happened to our Navy SEALs from SEAL Team 6. You don't want to miss this hard-hitting interview and the revelations of a grieving and proud father who will simply shock you. Did Joe Biden set up our SEALs? Were our finest purposely put in harm's way that night? Why were 22 members of SEAL Team 6 on the same aircraft? No media has told you the truth about Extortion 17, but on Saturday night, May 31st, at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, gather at the Awakening Show on Blog Talk Radio for the gut-wrenching facts. This show will be for mature audiences only.
And believe me, you want to be there, because I have a lot of questions about Extortion 17. Why is the Obama administration withholding facts from us? Why was that particular helicopter sent out there? Why was ANA on there? Why was the manifest changed? And why are we not getting straight answers as to how that helicopter came down? So please be there at Holger's place on Saturday and educate yourselves. Ladies and gentlemen, I have to implore you to educate yourselves and do the letter writing. Like, I am on a new mission, Tim, in Ecuador, in that I am encouraging every single person to sit down and write a letter, and write it, like, and put it in an envelope and put a stamp on it and ask your respective governments to declare Islam is not a religion. It's a political entity, and we have to remove their political, my apologies, we have to remove their protected religious status. And that means, if we can accomplish that, that means that we can get rid of organizations like the Muslim Student Association. We can get rid of the Council of American Islamic Relations. We can get rid of all sorts of these organizations that are eating up your tax dollars. Like, the amazing things Islamists get away with, and that is in terms of the corruption, the punishment, penalties, fatwas, Sharia law, and especially chapter 9, verse 29. I want to talk about something here. And, of course, this involves, you know, a young lady in the Sudan. Her name is Miriam. She's 8 months pregnant. They're going to hang her for apostasy. Oh, before they hang her, though, hang on, folks. They're going to give her 100 lashes, and that's for adultery, because her crime? Falling in love, marrying a man who's a Christian. And they're going to carry out these lashes, you know, exponentially. And that, you know, so that she doesn't die. Because, you know, when you are lashed 100 times, well, what happens? You die immediately. And so it's going to be exponential in the sense that it could go on for months and months and months on end. I put the link in the chat room. Sign the petition. Tim, what do you think about the pass that they get for this?
Well, there's a lot of people out there who say that we shouldn't interfere in what they do in other countries. They're only too happy to let Muslims come into Western democracies and try and impose their will in our own countries. But when it comes to the barbarities that are committed in the name of Islam in other countries, people who should be taking a moral stance and standing up and saying, no, this is wrong, are strangely quiet. We're very quick to take in refugees from Muslim countries when Muslim refugees from Muslim countries when there are conflicts and so on in various parts of the world, despite the obvious problems that they bring with them because they've got a Muslim background. But where there doesn't seem to be any kind of similar program set up to bring in Christian refugees who are persecuted far more harshly in Muslim countries and are in far more need of help by educated and enlightened Western countries. If we said, let's take in all the Christians that are currently being persecuted in Muslim countries, we would do a lot better for ourselves if we took them in preference to taking Muslim refugees. And this is just one such example. If we could just say, I mean, it's a very high-profile example, okay, but what you have to remember is for every high-profile example of this nature, there's probably 1,000 others in the same country of people who are being persecuted in a similar way, perhaps not quite to the same degree, but are still being persecuted in a way that makes their life difficult, if not actually intolerable. And we should be saying, as enlightened societies and democracies that subscribe to the Judeo-Christian civilizational model, we should be saying, welcome to those people. We should be going out of our way to make it easy for them and to encourage governments, Muslim governments who seem to have so much of a downer on these people. We should say, well, let us take them. Let's take them off your hands. You know, we'll take care of all the costs, and they'll be out of your hair, and you can run your country in an Islamic way if that's what you want to do. But don't inflict that on Christians, because Christians, you know, they're good people by and large, and if they come to Western countries as refugees, by and large they will make a success of their lives and contribute to the countries that that they're brought into. And the same cannot be said of Muslim refugees. With the best will in the world, because the Muslim mindset is mitigates against productive means of working, you do not find that Muslim refugees contribute in the same way. I'm not talking about every single one of the refugees that come automatically behaves in this way, but I'm talking in general terms, because that mindset that they bring with them tells them that they are wonderful people, far better than the kuffar, and they should not have to work for a living if there's kuffar that they can sponge off. And that's what we see Muslims doing, by and large, in Western countries, sponging off Western democracies, sponging off the welfare systems in a parasitic manner that threatens to bankrupt a lot of the welfare systems in many of these Western countries, and they think it's a perfectly acceptable thing to do. Well, it shouldn't be seen that way. They should not get a free... That's just another thing they should not get a free pass for. But I think if we could organise some sort of programme to rescue every single Christian that's under persecution in a Muslim country, our Western democracies would be far better off. And we could even say, I'll tell you what, you give us one of our Christian refugees, we'll give you 10 Muslims back. And that sounds like a reasonable exchange to me. And you can look after 10 Muslims and make your country even more Islamic in exchange for every one Christian. In fact, the more I think about it, ladies and gentlemen, the more I think that sounds like really quite a good plan. Let's make it 100 to 1, and I think we could be onto something here. But
that would be a solid deal.
Well, yeah,
and
I mean,
when I say exponentially is what I mean
incrementally. Incrementally is what you meant. I know what you meant.
I'm sorry?
Incrementally. That's the word.
Well,
you were
exponentially works well as well. So they'll give her 10, heal her up, then give her 20, and then heal her up and give her 40, and then heal her up and give her 60, and heal her up and give her 100.
Oh, right. Okay. Okay, that's exponentially. I'll give you that. Sorry, Kel, I was jumping ahead of you there. Sorry about that. I'm feeling too bright and buzzy for my own self, for my own good tonight, so I do apologise to everybody for that. Bright and buzzy, yeah. like a bee that has been painted in day glow paint. That's me. So there you go. So
where were you?
I was talking about the possibility of exchanging Christian refugees who are persecuted in Muslim countries, and say for every one of them we'll give them 100 back of Muslims that have come over to the UK, and the Muslims can take the benefits of having lived in the whatever Western country it is, and everything that they've learnt and all the wonderful things that we do, and they can apply those things back in Muslim countries, and everyone's a winner. It sounds a good idea to me. But at the moment, you're quite right, our Western civilization and our democracies, our political elites, I should say, that's what I was looking for, don't seem inclined to do that. And I don't really know why, apart from the fact that at the moment they think that Islam can do no wrong, and it's quite wrong to suggest otherwise. And anybody who stands up and says that Islam is a ruthless totalitarian political ideology, about as much use as an ashtray on a motorbike or a chocolate teapot, they get slammed down for being racist, bigoted Islamophobes. And it's quite wrong. It's all got to change.
Absolutely. And Agador, I have a question for you. I'm wondering, you are in the United States of America, and you're dealing with an administration that seems rather satisfied with the amazing ways that Islamists get a free pass. And I'm going to take it right down to the grassroots. Well, not the grassroots. That's a terrible, terrible phrase to use. But we have experienced in Canada, in the United States, honor killings and how they are giving them a free pass. We have the latest example is, a man being charged with second-degree murder for murdering his wife in an honor killing. Agador, you are in the United States, and your legal system is tolerating this. How do you feel about that?
Well, obviously, I feel angry. In the particular case you're talking about, Everything that I've heard about it points to that it should have been murder one. It should have been murder in the first degree. It was premeditated. He knew that he was going to do it. Now he comes back and says that it was an accident. I find this very difficult to believe, especially given the Islamic culture, because I'm sure that he's eyeing a very nubile 9-year-old girl right now, and that is about half a joke, but it's an extremely sick joke because it's probably also about 3/4 true. Islam uses people, and yes, the double standard exists here. The tolerance for these crimes exists here because it is fashionable to uphold Islam. It goes back to something that was said, actually, believe it or not, by progressives in the United Kingdom when they decided that they were going to allow a lot of immigration of Islamists into the United Kingdom to, quote, rub the face of the right in diversity, end quote. And the same thing is going on here in the United States. Culturally speaking, as Europe goes, so goes the States. And yes, I agree with Tim when it comes to this immigration question. It is simply not fashionable to give persecuted Christians entry into the United States of America because our progressive government seems to be at this stage at war with Christianity, because Christianity opposes the kind of all-encompassing government that we seem to have now from both our Democratic and establishment Republican parties. So naturally, it is not fashionable to allow people who might disagree with that into the country, as opposed to parasites who fly under the flag of Islam into the country, who are more than happy to overstress our welfare system. It's a double standard when it comes to immigration. It's a double standard also when it comes to our legal system. And I think as any American in the chat box would agree with me right now, I am quite frankly fed up with it. Yes, we do need new leaders, better leaders, a higher caliber of leaders who are willing to take responsibility and willing to make those first steps, because the law anywhere should work for everyone in an equal measure, not just not one way for one group of people and one way for another. Back to you.
Absolutely. And that summed it up perfectly. And what I want to do is, we are at the top of the hour, and we are going to take our break. And I think that this song is appropriate. And we'll see everybody back here in 4.5 minutes. Welcome back, everybody, and you are listening to the Red Fox Blogger. I am your host, Kel Fritzy, and the other host is Tim Burton, and I better unmute them. And joining us on the panel, we usually don't have a panel, but if you listen to the beginning of the program, I had to retire my dog to another realm. So Agador is also joining us tonight. Gentlemen, I want to talk about something here, though. And Agador, this is coming out of the United States. There is a case going on in Colorado, and that a student choir member was told that he could be killed for singing the Islamic song. Now, there is, let me see if I can actually bring this up proper. Now, there was a student that dropped out of high school because he refused to sing a song praising Allah. And his name is James. I'm not going to offer his last name. People can search for that if they like. Or the clip will speak for itself. But his name is James. He received a death threat after he said that I'm not going to sing this song. And the public school defended its decision to have the choir sing an Islamic song. And this was, you know, oh, poor student. He would be forced to leave school if the school had done the right thing. And but they suspended him. They expelled him. And he was defending his right not to sing this particular song. Now, this is going to be a twofold Agador, but I want everybody to listen to this.
The student says he's facing death threats because he refused to sing a song about Allah in a school choir. James Harper dropped out of the choir at his school in Colorado over these lyrics in the song. Quote, "There is no truth except Allah." And now he's so scared he's dropped out of school. Listen.
I don't want to seem like a racist or a bigot or anything. I'm just really rather uncomfortable. Any religion, singing to any other god, makes me uncomfortable. That's not just exclusive to the Muslims.
The school says, quote, "This is not a case where the school is endorsing or promoting any particular religion. Song was chosen because its rhythms and other qualities would provide an opportunity to exhibit the musical talent, not because of its religious message. Choir members who object to or are uncomfortable will not be required to sing."
Well, well, well. A young lad speaking up and saying, "I'm not going to sing this song." I have another clip that I'm going to play, Agador, before I pass it over to you. And this is, there's a Turkish Muslim, and he says singing the song Zikr, you're essentially reciting the words of the Shahada, which means you are accepting Islam. And if you deny that you are a Muslim after saying these words, you could be executed in strict Muslim communities. And so, Agador, I'm going to play this one next.
The same song that had one Grand Junction High School student quit the choir has a surprising religious meaning behind it. News Channel 5 reporter John Diaz joins us now live from the studio and with us more. And John, what's the significance of the song?
Well, Christina, it's actually the meaning behind a verse in the song known as the Shahada. Now, I had a chance to speak with a local expert who wants to inform the public about what could happen after singing the verse. Steve Hagerman, part of the Turkish World Organization, says the Islamic prayer song Zikr has a statement within it called Shahada, and if stated, comes with consequences.
The Shahada is the Muslim statement of faith, and the simple way to become a Muslim is to say the Shahada.
Hagerman says this draws a problem for the Grand Junction High School students who were singing this song because they don't know what's to come after.
When they sing the Shahada, they need to realize that to radical and conservative Muslims, they are then becoming Muslims.
Hagerman went on to say that the public should know what's to come by stating the Shahada because it could be a death sentence.
In strict Islam, if you become a Muslim, you say the Shahada, and then later you revert to the practice, say, of Christianity or Judaism, strict Muslims are supposed to kill you.
Now, officials at one mosque in Denver told me that the idea only exists in Muslim-based countries and is of the most radical of beliefs. There's their opinion on it that no one in the United States should worry about this, especially students singing the song. Reporting live in the newsroom, John Diaz, News Channel 5.
John, thank you.
Now, Agador, I'm getting back to you. This, once again, this is international. This is not restricted to the United States. It's happening in the UK. It's happening in Canada. Now, this young student refused to sing this so-called hymn in his high school, and he was offered death threats, and he left that high school. I'm going to pass it to Tim in a moment, but Agador, the question that I want to ask you is, why is it that our very students, our very children, are confronted with this Islamic threat in their very high schools?
Well, my immediate impression is that this is driven by a lot of clueless educators. They obviously did not know about the Shahada, and they probably were doing, as I was talking about earlier with immigration, the fashionable thing. It's fashionable to do Islamic things in American culture now because it tweaks the nose of those tinfoil hat-wearing, crazy, right-wing nut jobs who think that Islam is a problem. So that's probably where it's being driven through, but who knows who started it? I mean, I would be very interested indeed to learn whose idea this was originally and what their background is. I think we'd be very fascinated by the result. And I want to say that this young man, who refused to sing the song and was punished for it, has, in my opinion, a very good basis for a lawsuit and should pursue that to its fullest extent. And I applaud him. He is braver than any of our political leaders at this point because he refuses to bow. He will not sing this hymn for Islam. And I would further state that strictly speaking, if schools were being secular, they wouldn't have any hymns at all being sung in their in public schools. But apparently, it's all right to sing an Islamic hymn in a public school. Once again, that free pass that Tim likes to talk about being given to Islam. My guess is there would be a lot more coverage of this. And the outcry would have been a lot larger if it had been a Christian hymn such as Holy, Holy, Holy or something of that nature. But since it's about Islam, no big outcry, crickets from the media practically, and this brave young man who stood up and said no, as all of our societies should do, gets punished for it. That's my perspective. And back to you.
And I am
yes.
So totally on board with that. And Tim, you are witnessing this in your public schools.
We certainly are. We certainly are. We haven't had that particular example, to my knowledge anyway, where students have been required to sing an Islamic song which includes the words of the Shahada. I wouldn't be at all surprised to read about it, though, in the near future, because it's just the kind of thing that clueless educators, as Agador says, you know, will foist upon unsuspecting school children. And they have a duty of care towards school children to be extremely cognizant of things like this. But it's part and parcel of, as Agador says, what's happening in the US is also what's happening in the UK. Educators are very keen to try and promote Islam as being one of the part and parcel of the great multicultural and diversity experiment that's currently going on in UK education now. And only a few months ago, we had an incident where children were told that they had to attend an Islamic workshop. This was quite near my hometown, actually, in Staffordshire. And they were told that if they did not attend this Islamic workshop, then they would have a black mark on their school record that would stay with them all through their school life, which is an absolutely appalling thing to apply to a young child who doesn't fully understand the consequences of whether or not they go on a particular workshop like this. Now, in that particular instance, when it was brought to public attention and the local MP was involved, the headmistress of the school in question actually rescinded the command and said, well, you know, we're certainly not going to make it compulsory. We're not going to give anybody black marks after the event when it became public. But I mean, that should have been a resigning matter, and the headmistress in that case didn't resign, and she wasn't forced to or even requested to resign, which is another matter entirely. But we're also starting to see with the Trojan horse investigation more recently in the UK that Muslims are intent on pushing an Islamic agenda into our education system to the detriment, of course, of anybody who isn't Muslim. And even if you were to apply this Islamic agenda to a school which was 100% full of Muslim pupils, it would still be the wrong thing to do, because what we want to do is to encourage children who are growing up in our country to become good British citizens, not to become good Muslims, because the two are completely incompatible. They're like oil and water. If you are a good Muslim, you cannot be a good citizen of a Western democracy. By definition, a Muslim owes allegiance only to Islam and the Ummah, the Muslim, the world Muslim population, if you like. They do not owe allegiance to the individual countries, and that is completely against the whole concept of being a resident or a citizen of many countries. Certainly it's true in the UK that if you're a citizen of the UK, you owe allegiance to Her Majesty the Queen, first and foremost, and to the exclusion of any other sovereign or any other ideology for that matter. So Islam is completely incompatible, and the fact that our educators seem so keen on pushing Islam to our young children, our young vulnerable children who don't know what it is that's being foisted on them, is absolutely unconscionable. What I'm hoping is that when some sanity returns to the political landscape, that the people at the top of the chain in terms of who's deciding what goes on in Islamic circles are taken out and made an example of in the most, shall we say, memorable manner. And I'm not going to expand on that in any way, shape or form. It's just something that I think ought to happen. So that's my view on it.
I think that's interesting. One salient point that you brought up was the Pledge of Allegiance to the Queen. And in Canada, if you want to emigrate here from wherever you came from and be an immigrant and contribute to the country, we welcome that. If you want to become a citizen of Canada, you have to take your citizenship oath. And what that is pledging allegiance to the Queen. And Queen Elizabeth is the Queen of Canada. And we have a lot of people here that emigrate from other countries, and they do not want to take the oath of allegiance to the Queen. And that's a real big problem with us. And we have I'm going to turn this a little bit, and I'm certainly going to turn this back to Tim. It's when you arrive on our shores and you want to become a citizen of that country and you take the oath of allegiance, for example, and that is that you are going to uphold the man-made laws of the country and also recognize our sovereign, then you have to take the oath. We have groups in Canada that are saying, hey, I just want to live here, dude. And but, you know, give me my benefits. And but I don't want to take the oath of allegiance to the Queen of Britain. And that really upsets me because everybody knows I am a British subject in a sense that England gave me Canada. And so on that premise, I am a sovereign to the Queen of England. And when I see these immigrants and they're all dancing around and making noises and they don't want to, you know, take that particular oath, it drives me batshit crazy.
Well, indeed, and we've all become far too politically correct and multiculturally diverse, and we're not requiring this of people, and we really should. I think that the concept of a nation is something that binds people together, and it gives a nation, an individual, an identity. I mean, it wasn't for nothing that I know the nation state concept hasn't been in existence for a great mm-hmm. deal of time, historically speaking, but it does bring a benefit in that it binds people together and creates a sense of belonging. And in a world that's constantly changing, having that sense of belonging to a particular country or a particular culture is very important. And all these people who want to introduce multiculturalism and at the same time bleat on about community cohesion are completely missing the point. If we were to make it compulsory, I mean, all these welfare benefits that we're happily giving away hand over fist, if we made that conditional on somebody becoming a citizen of the country, and I'm not just sort of saying, you know, paying your $10 and going up and reciting the words and getting a slip of paper saying you're now a citizen. I'm talking about a proper citizenship course whereby you demonstrate that you truly understand the nature and the benefits of citizenship. And you understand the history of the country that you're applying to become a citizen of, and until you become a citizen, you don't get any of the benefits that we currently hand out left, right, and centre to anybody who just lands on our shores and holds their hands out. If we were to do that, we would be far, far stronger in our individual Western democracies, and we could get rid of a lot of the dross who come over to our countries and who are completely unproductive, a complete drain on our welfare benefits, and at the same time they're working to undermine our democracies and to do away with the concept of democracy and replace it with the idea of a caliphate. This is madness to allow this to happen, and I think if we were to just restrict any benefits that we give to people who have demonstrated they want to be good, productive citizens, we'd all be a lot better off. People, of course, were on the left of the political spectrum will shout discrimination, and we should be prepared to say, well, so what? We are discriminating because we want our countries and our democracies and our societies to survive and to prosper. And we are never, ever going to be in a position to extend those benefits to everybody who comes over from the third world, holds their hands out and demands to be given something for nothing. That's just unsustainable. So we may as well just say as much and stop it right now and absolutely cease and desist from giving benefits to people who have nothing productive to give to the country, and we should encourage them not to stay here a moment longer and to send them back whence they came. And just to keep people here who subscribe to the concept of citizenship and being a good citizen and being productive.
I think we have moved into a very interesting arena in the segment, and immigration, allegiance, and Agador, that really triggers something that I was reading about the other day, and that is the Obama administration, and they're offering amnesty to Mexican illegals. And I do not say anything further than that, because we know what else swims across the border. But when they come over Agador. They are here, and they do not pledge allegiance to the flag. I don't know exactly what the pledge of allegiance means to these people. Agador, it just drives me crazy. Like, I know you don't pledge to the Queen because you kind of kicked our butts there. But when they come over here and they pledge allegiance to the United States of America, that's one thing. But you have illegals that are potentially able to vote.
Well, God save King George.
Yes, God save him now, because he's been dead for over 200 years. Certainly I pledge allegiance, as do my fellow Americans, to our nation, which is our people. And I have a particular perspective on this when it comes to immigration problem from the other parts of the United of Americas, because I come from Texas and I've been exposed to La Raza and many of their opinions for quite some time. They believe that much of the southwestern United States was stolen from Mexico. And therefore, they have zero, the ones who come over here illegally have zero allegiance to the United States of America. In fact, they view our nation as piratical in a way. And they believe that these portions of the United States that I'm speaking of, say from California all the way to Texas, have been stolen from them. So they feel a sense of entitlement. They're perfectly willing to come over and do as Islamists are doing right now in Europe, get on our welfare system, overstress it, take all the money they can from it because they believe they're owed. And it's a very similar situation. And I just want to add a comment, put it in the chat box, comment to what Tim was talking about with the multiculturalism. I find it ironic in the extreme that people, in the name of multiculturalism, refuse to pledge allegiance to our various countries that both allow and encourage multiculturalism. If it wasn't for our open-minded Western states, multiculturalism would not exist. I would invite these people to go to the Sudan right now and see how much multiculturalism they find. Maybe head over to Syria and see how much multiculturalism there is there. To end their little multicultural magical mystery tour, stop off in Saudi Arabia and see how much multiculturalism you find. It's in our Western democracies where this takes place. So I just find it ironic and rather childish to not pledge allegiance to these nations that have allowed and encouraged multiculturalism and have grown up to a point where we can tolerate people of all colors, all faiths, and even all creeds, even those that deny the very nations they're living in. And back to you.
Well, I think what is going on is that Western democracies, I know the United States is a republic, but, I'm going to speak in the generic sense, and that is Western democracies, and we have very refined constitutions, maybe some better than others, but all the same, we have an established constitutional format. We follow the Book of Rules, and we also follow the Magna Carta, and we've been premised on that. And by the way, England, thank you very much. Hey, Tim, how you doing? But it is that the caliber of immigrants that we're receiving on our shores are not respecting that. They're not respecting the golden rule. They are not respecting our way in which we conduct ourselves, and they are not respecting the way in which we expect the immigrant to conduct itself, as it were. And this worries me greatly. And what worries me even more is the caliber of the immigrant. And we look at the UK, and we look at what's happening in the United States, and we look at the usurpers disguising themselves as a religion, i.e. Islam, and we should be very concerned. This is why I am engaging on a big project down the road, and this is called, it's going to be called the letter writing campaign to your local politician, your provincial politician in Canada, your federal politician. Write a letter and declare that Islam is not a religion, and have it de-indexed and have it declared as a terrorist organization. And I have a question for Tim, and that is, when you see the caliber of the immigrant that you are receiving in the UK today, it's not only the singular immigrant, but it's the immigrant and his wife and his cousin and his aunt and his sister, and they're all on the benefit. And this is draining the UK.
Well, it is, and in common with most other Western democracies as well, because the welfare system was originally devised as a safety net for people who were genuinely unable to work, maybe through no fault of their own. And in that respect, when it was first devised, I think you could say it was devised with the best of intentions, but it's expanded into, rather than just a safety net, it's expanded into a feather bed for people who are completely undeserving. And I'm not just talking about people who could get a job but don't. I'm talking about people who come over to this country with the specific intention of not getting a job at all, getting benefits, bringing in loads and loads of relatives. And in the case of Islam, of course, if you've got a man who brings in, let's say he brings in four wives, not all of them will bring in four wives, but if they bring in one or two and they have six or eight children per wife, all of a sudden that's 8, 16, 32 children. All right, that's not going to be for every single Muslim immigrant, but all of these Muslims, all these Muslim children will be brought up as Muslims, unless the state does anything about it, and at the moment they're not going to do anything about it. They'll be brought up with the same ideology, which means that as they grow up, they will have this same antipathy to the state. They'll have the same antipathy to the kafir, to the kufar rather, the antipathy towards anybody who is not Muslim, and the same outlook on life, which says it's perfectly all right to take money for the kufar and not do anything productive in return. Now, that is something that can only go on for so long. That's just not a sustainable thing. And that's what I mean when I say we should step in and stop this right now, because it's a ridiculous state of affairs that we allow to continue purely in the name of political correctness and multiculturalism. And it can't go on forever. And when it does break down, if we haven't done anything to actually stop the rot at this point, then what's going to happen is we're going to end up with civil war in our streets, because eventually the money will run out. The Muslims will say, where's our money? And we'll have to say, well, there isn't any more. And at that point, there will be blood on the streets. And we're going to be at the sharp end of that, or our children and grandchildren will. And why should we inflict this on them? We have the opportunity to do something about it now. And for all these reasons that you mentioned and more, we ought to be insisting that our leaders actually do what they're paid to do and take a lead in protecting our countries from enemies domestic and foreign, and in particular from Muslims who come over here, take welfare benefits, give nothing in return, and bring up children who will have exactly the same outlook. It's a crazy, crazy situation, and we shouldn't allow it.
Absolutely, Tim. Absolutely. And this is why I am working on a new campaign, and that is to letter write your politicians and put a halt to this. And not only have them stand up, have the balls to fucking stand up and say, hey, look, you know, this Islam, it's going on, you know, it's been going on for far too long, and we're sick and tired of it, and we want you to deal with it. We're sick of the lifers in our respective parliaments or our Senate and our houses. We're sick and tired of it. Get rid of Islam. De-index it. But the immigration issue. Halt all immigration from Islamic states, and also concentrate on the refugee system. We are taking in way too many refugees from Islamic states. We in the West, we're taking in all the world's refuse. It's time to stop that as well. And Canada disproportionately takes in so many refugees. It's unbelievable. We can't sustain them. They come here. Do you, Agador and Tim, I don't know if you knew this, but when refugees, you know, swam in up on our shores, they were getting free dental. They were getting free eye care. They were getting free everything. Do you know me, as a Canadian citizen, a tax-paying Canadian citizen who has worked for 40 years? Okay, I didn't start working when I was 10. You know, that's a Charles. That would be a Charles Dickens novel. But somebody who's been working all her life and paying into the healthcare system in Canada, these people were swimming over, and they were getting benefits. They got free eye care, dental, and I had to pay for my dental work. I had to have dental work done last year. It cost me $5,000, and these same people were getting it for free on my tax dime. That is just unbelievable to me. Now, finally, the Harper government, Stephen Harper, the Prime Minister of Canada, he said, hey, what's going on there? And he put the kibosh on that. But all the same, I am furious that I had to pay $5,000 to get my teeth fixed up. And these bloody boat people come over here, and the first thing they're going through is the processing system, and they're ushered into the infirmaries, and they're getting their eyes looked at, they're getting their teeth looked at, and they're getting great dental work done, and it's all on my fucking dime. I'm sorry. It really bothers me. And Agador, you must feel the same way.
Well, I do, Kel. And really what you should have done when you went in was wear a burqa and dare them to charge you. But you didn't, and they charge you the full price. And it's happening here, too, and it's happening in the U.K. It's happening here with some people that No Way 90, who at least was in the chat box, I think he still is quite familiar with, and that is the Islamists from Somalia. They come over, and boom, they're instantly given every form of assistance that there is. And now, I know that in the United States of America, Our welfare systems originally began for the people who, through no fault of their own, were unable to work. We didn't want our old to starve to death and freeze to death. And we didn't want the sick and infirmed to go without. And that has always been something that everyone has supported, even on the government level. But this is also things that that the Islamists feel they are owed, just as Tim says.
Yeah.
We are the kafir, and we owe them. Therefore, they can come and take advantage of the fruits of our labor. If any of us have worked at all and put into the system, it doesn't matter as long as they get what they want. It's almost amusing to me when I see people wake up to this fact. They were playing a British individual. I don't think it was Anjum Chowdhury on the Glenn Beck Blaze thing, talking about how the kafir owe us this and owe us that.
Chowdhury. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That was
Okay,
that,
then
that
you
was
can
the
it.
Yeah. He was declaring the jizya tax.
Right. He was saying that if an Islamist meets a kafir and the kafir has better clothes, the kafir should remove those clothes and give them to the Islamists. That's this man's whole shtick. And all he is doing, in a way, I'm glad he exists, because he is telling the exact truth that many, many of these immigrants to all of our countries will not say. They'll just take advantage of it, and they'll just do it. Now, back to you guys.
Yeah, I think that was that particular guy. That wasn't Anjum Chowdhury. He was reported
oh,
on.
It wasn't?
It was reported on. It's easily confused because Anjum Chowdhury is just a grasping little Muslim scumbag anyway. It's an easy mistake to make. They're both grasping little Muslim scumbags, and that's a trademark description. Not everybody can use that, but I used it in a court and got away with it. Anjum Chowdhury was not that particular character. This was another guy. He was he'd got some Salafist tendencies, I think. I think he's got some ointment for it now, but at the time, you know, when he came out with these. When he came out with this phrase, yeah, he said, you know, if a Muslim meets a non-Muslim in the street and the non-Muslim's got better clothes, that non-Muslim has to give his clothes to the Muslim. And if a Muslim goes to a non-Muslim's house late on a Friday night and asks for a bed for the night, that non-Muslim has to give him a bed for the night. And it's all this bollocks he's coming out with. But Islamically speaking, he's absolutely correct. And in an Islamic, an ideal Islamic country, Christians or non-Muslims have to do that. I think, if I'm not mistaken, that's all part of the infamous Pact of Omar that's referred to quite frequently in the song 929 that we have at the beginning of the show. And the Pact of Omar was actually a pact that way back in the 7th century, long time ago, non-Muslims, in order not to be killed, had to agree to onerous conditions to continue living in a Muslim country. And apart from not being allowed to build their houses any higher than Muslim houses, not being allowed to ring bells as part of Christian prayer or Christian ritual, if a Muslim passed a non-Muslim in the street and wanted something that this non-Muslim was wearing, the non-Muslim had to give it to him on pain of death. And if a Muslim said to a non-Muslim, yeah, I want to stay in your house because I'm traveling and I want to stay for up to 3 days, I think, you had to give bed and board to a Muslim. There were all sorts of conditions like this that were all part and parcel of the Pact of Omar that's in the song 929 that you'll hear at the start of each of our shows. And that's uh, that that all that guy was doing when he came onto that particular video clip that Agador's referring to, he's referring to that Pact of Omar, and he thinks that it's quite okay for Muslims to demand those kind of concessions from non-Muslims. And that's why we have to kick their asses. We have to tell them that this is just not acceptable, and if you want to practice that kind of stuff, you have no place in a Western democracy at all, full stop. If you cannot assimilate and integrate, then you should get the fuck out of our countries. And that's another $104 you owe me for that. Sorry, that we're having a little bet on F-bombs tonight, but
this is why the Red Fox blogger is also aka the F-bomb show, because we get very passionate about what we do, and we are very committed to what we do. And it's interesting, Tim and Agador, I was listening to a Georgia's Firefox News Online last night, and he said that we're not grassroots. We are the new mainstream media, and I liked that. I liked hearing that. And Bigfoot is saying, drink up, Tim, and Tim dropped the F-bomb.
Well, I don't normally do that, but I thought, well, hey, it's Monday.
Well,
it's the Red
fine.
Fox. It's the Red Fox blogger show.
I like the passion that people bring to this program, because, you know, there's a lot of things that we have to wake people up about, and it is about time that we start saying that we've had it. And this RFB radio, speaks about the issues of Islam, as you obviously have figured out, but we're way too quaint about it sometimes. And when we get passionate about something, it is time to get vernacular about it, as it were. Like, I have no problems with it, Tim, there.
Oh, good. But I wouldn't normally do it. I do get passionate about things from time to time, but I try and tend to avoid it if I can.
Tim usually leaves that to his little Eliza Doolittle.
Well, sometimes, you know, there are times when only the F-bomb will do, and I think that was one of them. So I apologise to all those listeners of a sensitive nature, and you probably won't hear it again from me tonight, but there you go. Once a night is enough, as the actress said to the bishop, but we'll gloss over that. So back to you, Kel.
I just want to let everybody know that we are down to our last talking points, and I am so appreciative of Agador joining the show tonight. It's not a panel show. It's just that I have been undergoing a very, very, very sad day, and I asked Agador earlier if he would be able to help take some of the load off my shoulders and Tim's shoulders, because Tim knows that I've had a very bad day. And Agador, thank you so very much. And do you have any closing comments that you would like to make?
Well, only that, first of all, Kel, you should, in your time of loss, you should remember that you're not alone. You have many friends here to help you along the way, and please lean on us, because that's what we're here for. And as to today's show, what Islamists or what Islam gets away with, it is on all of us, I think, as the new media, as the new mainstream media, because yes, I believe that people who say this are right. Old media is over. It is incumbent on all of us to keep spreading the truth of what Islam gets away with. And if we can get enough of that into our culture, and if our people decide that they've had enough because of the information we can spread, then maybe Islam will get away with less and less and less, and it will begin to dry up and blow away from our countries and from the consciousness of the civilization of this entire planet. And back to you guys, and thank you for having me on, Kel and Tim.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Good to have you, Agador.
Absolutely, Agador. Thank you so very, very, very much. And Tim, do you have any closing points that you would like to make?
Well, only to echo what Agador said. I mean, it's certainly the case, and I think we've made that case tonight, that Muslims do get away with an awful lot in the name of Islam that they shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody else would get away with it for a moment. It's only because they have successfully pushed this victimhood and this grievance mongering to the extent, not to mention the taqiyya. I didn't even mention the taqiyya in the same sense. Sentences, grievance,
oh,
mongering.
Yeah, you... Tim, you're slowing
down.
Yeah,
I'm slipping. I know I'm slipping. But the fact is that Muslims have used taqiyya to lie to non-Muslims for generations, for 1,400 years. Generations of Muslims have lied to generations of non-Muslims about the nature of Islam. And we have swallowed it, and we've built up this picture over time that Islam is somehow a benign and tolerant religion of peace when it's nothing of the sort. It's a ruthless totalitarian political ideology, completely opposed to Western civilization, and has no place in Western democracies whatsoever. And we've made a huge mistake in bringing over large numbers of Muslims with the baggage of Islam with them and allowing them to set up shop in our countries and promote Islam as being somehow equivalent to the Judeo-Christian morals and ethics that we have used, we have worked by and lived by so successfully for hundreds of years. And that's all under threat now because of this barbaric 7th century ideology that is being treated equivalent to our way of doing things, and it's nothing of the sort, and it's getting a free pass all the time, and it has to stop. And the
mm-hmm.
more people that recognize this, we have to, everybody who's listening here in the chat room tonight should get out and spread that word as much as they can tomorrow and the day after and the day after that, until all their friends, all their relatives, all their work colleagues, everybody that they talk to should get an earful of what we've been talking tonight, until everybody gets it. And when everybody does get it, then we can boot Islam out of our countries and it'll be gone. Because when people wake up to what this really is, what Islam really is, once they learn the truth about Islam, nobody will stand for it. We will not stand for it for another moment, and Islam will crumble into dust because there's nothing good about it at all. There's no benefit to humanity from Islam. Is the only benefit that Islam has is the benefit for itself to make more Islam. That's all it has, and everything that it does is geared up to simply making more Islam.
Yeah.
There's no goodness, there's no beauty, there's no truth in the way that there is in other philosophies and in religions, because I don't classify Islam as a religion. There is nothing in the way of an external reference for goodness, beauty and truth. It's just, can it make more Islam? If it can, it's good. Does it get in the way of making more Islam? If it does, it's bad. And that's the only reference of good and bad that Islam has. And that's why it's the most immoral, corrupt, inhumane ideology on the planet, bar none. And we do not need it. Nobody needs Islam. People tend to say it's a cancer. Well, yes, that is a good analogy, but I try not to use that word too much because it's a bit overused. But nevertheless, It is a poisonous weed, if you like, in what could be quite a nice garden, if only it were allowed to be cultivated a bit better. And we have to get Islam completely out of our societies, completely out of our civilization, and ultimately completely out of the world, because there'll be no peace as long as Islam retains its hold on the minds of men. And it's not me that said that, ladies and gentlemen. That was from one of our prime ministers from over 100 years ago, a chap called Benjamin Disraeli. And he famously held up a Quran in the Houses of Parliament and said, there will be no peace while this book retains its hold on the minds of men. And I couldn't agree with that more. But that's enough
Fantastic.
For me. And I'm handing the microphone back to you, Kel.
And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, we are wrapping up the show. But I want to remind you that it is mass Islamity. We have to stop the insanity. And Islam is a political entity. Keep it out of your countries. And de-index it as a religion. And declare it as a banned organization for all that is good and decent, for God's sake, for God and country. Please, Tim, Agador, and myself implore you that you ensure that it is declared a political party and ban it now.
Yes.
Agador, I can't thank you both enough. Thank you so very much for being here and pardon me, helping me out. I, ladies and gentlemen, as you know or may not know, I had to put down my dog Brandy of 14 years. I had to send her over to the Rainbow Bridge, and it was a really hard day for me, and but she was in my arms, she was with me, and she fell asleep, and it was very quiet, but it was hard. Knowing that the vet, when they put the stethoscope to her and declared her dead, that was an end of an era for me. This was my beautiful, beautiful hound dog, my beautiful puppy dog. I adopted her when she was 6 months old. She was born May 7th in 2000. And she rests easy now. And I did the right thing because she was in pain. And I want to thank Tim and I want to thank Agador for helping me get through this program. But most of all, we, the three of us, want to thank you for being here. We want to thank Sweet Sue from New Mexico. We want to thank people that joined us in the chat room, and of course that's Bigfoot, Desperado, Dodgy Dave, Getting for Freedom, numerous guests, has questions, No Way 90, Paul Alexander, Smokey, and my tree tweet. And we have people pop in and people pop out, and that includes Holger. We want to thank everybody that listens in archives, because we know that you take time out of your busy day to spend with us. And I'm going to play out with a special song for my little doggy. And Tim and Agador, you guys have a great night.
Yeah, you too, Kel. We're very happy to be here with you, and we want to give you, you know, all the love we possibly can, and to support you in every way we can. We know how hard it is, and we're thinking of you. So you have a great night.
Thanks,
too.
Kim. You have a great night too, Kel. Thank you very much.
Everybody, Tim and myself, we will see you tomorrow night at the Radio Jihad Network. and our guest will be Eric Bressot. And
Yeah, we certainly will.
Person behind the Let's Draw Muhammad Day in Canada. And so that will be a very exciting show. So please try to tune in for that. But like Tim and myself always say, it is mass Islamity. We have to stop the insanity. And Islam is a political entity. Ladies and gentlemen, have a great week. And we'll see you back here on Monday. Good night,
Kel. Yes,
good night, Agador.
Good night, Kel. Good night, Agador.
Good night, Kel. Good night, Tim.